Now, the first couple of Texas Radio. Here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
We are Bill and Allison, fighting a never-ending battle for truth, justice.
And the never-ending...
Well, this is getting off to a great start. Good night. Oh,
justice and the never...
And the American way. You only say it every show.
The American way.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, my. We are non-binary, by the way, Bill and Allison. We are non-binary, as is everyone at the Hill Country Patriot, your information station, of course. I don't know if you knew this, Allison, but in 1982, in this week, a line drive foul ball hit a four-year-old boy in the head at Fenway Park. Mm. And Jim Rice, who's a Hall of Famer, of course, realized that it would take EMTs too long to arrive and cut through the crowd. He sprang out of the dugout, scooped up the boy, laid him on the dugout floor where the Red Sox medical team began to treat him. And when the boy arrived at the hospital 30 minutes later, doctors said without a doubt that Jim Rice's prompt action saved the boy's life. And Jim Rice returned to the game in a blood-stained uniform. After visiting the boy in the hospital, he stopped by the business office and instructed that the bill be sent to him. Jim Rice, our hero of the day.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, isn't that right? Mm-hmm. That's nice. Yeah. So we've got a lot going on, I'll tell you. We've got, later on in the show, we're going to be talking about events going on in the Hill Country that you and your family should know all about, things to do this weekend. We have a candidate for mayor of Kerrville coming up, and Election Day is Monday, and it's been early voting. This is the problem I have with early voting. I mean, you might go out and vote early voting and then find out, I should have voted for the other person, but it's too late. That's what happened in Pennsylvania when John Fetterman, who never should have been a candidate, you know, he's got severe medical problems, mental problems, affected by his physical problems, and he debated Dr. Muhammad Oz, who was the Republican candidate, but the debate was so far after the early voting, and they did polls afterwards, and there were many, many, many people who said, boy, if I'd known John Fetterman couldn't put two sentences together, I never would have voted for him in early voting. But that was the problem. That was the problem. Speak on that subject, not quite early, well, it is early voting, mail-in ballot voting. A new study from the Heartland Institute examined the likely impact of fraudulent mail-in ballots in the election, 2020 election, between Trump and Biden. And this study, which is a credible study, the Heartland Institute is a very credible organization, found that President Donald Trump, quote, almost certainly would have won without the massive increase in mail-in voting.
So, well, certainly would have or not
would have won. It says Trump almost certainly won in 2020. They examined the what they call the likely impact that fraudulent mail-in ballots cast for both Joe Biden and Donald Trump in the 2020 election could have had, the impact it could have had upon the overall electoral results, based upon recently unearthed evidence indicating widespread mail-in voter fraud indeed occurred in the 2020 election. And what they found is 1 in 5 mail-in voters admitted to potentially fraudulent actions in casting their 2020 election ballots. 21% of mail-in voters admitted that they filled out a ballot for a friend or a family member. 17% of mail-in voters said they signed a ballot for a friend or family member, quote, with or without his or her permission. 19% of mail-in voters said that a friend or family member filled out their ballot. Over 43% of ballots were cast by mail in 2020, the highest percentage in history by a wide margin, and the vast majority went for Joe Biden. And there was one county, there were 4,000 ballots cast, 99.3% they claimed was for Joe Biden. That doesn't happen. Not even in communist countries, they're not that bold to claim that. But the author of the Heartland Institute's study said, quote, had the 2020 election been conducted like every national election has been over the past two centuries, wherein the vast majority of voters cast ballots in person rather than by mail, Donald Trump would have almost certainly been reelected. In the new study, researchers found that 28% of respondents who voted by mail committed at least one type of behavior that is, quote, under most circumstances, illegal. This means that more than one in four ballots, more than 25% cast by mail in 2020, were likely cast fraudulently and should not have been counted.
While we're talking about elections, you may or may not know that the Biden administration has planned to bar the sale of menthol cigarettes. Were you aware of that?
No, I was not. Okay. Not that I don't smoke. So it's not on my radar screen.
My brother smoked from a very young age, and he started with menthols. Anyway, the Biden administration proposed that. But guess what? The Biden campaign found out that that was upsetting to black voters in an election.
Well, I've heard anecdotal statements that menthol cigarettes are smoked by black people more than white people. Is that accurate, or is that just some urban mm-hmm. legend? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, 81% of black smokers smoke menthols, while only 30% of white.
Really?
51% of Hispanics.
Well, I thought it's not some story, then.
Hmm? Well, no, it's in part because they're aggressively marketed to black communities for decades.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
What's
I don't
the
know.
Point of that?
That's how...
Well, that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know, by the way, a little factoid here, prior to 1920, it was possible to send children through the U.S. Postal Service?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my. There were certain conditions. This is not a joke. This is a fact.
Well, wasn't it cheaper than a train ticket?
Probably. Yeah, I would think so. First, the children had to weigh less than 50 pounds. Stamps were attached to their clothes. And it was more cost effective to send a child via U.S. mail rather than a train.
Mm-hmm.
But during the journey, the children would travel on a train in the mail car, and mail clerks supervised them, provide them with food and drink. One example we know of, was a distance of over 700 miles from Florida to Virginia, the child had just 15 cents worth of stamps.
What a bargain.
We should try to put some stamps on our clothes and show up at the post office and say we want to go to we want to go to Florida.
Well, okay, speaking of Florida,
mm-hmm.
I guess spring break is pretty much coming to an end. Miami Beach has long been a spring break party hub. They have created an anti-tourism ad and rules to try to deter rowdy college students from clogging up its beaches this year during spring break season. During two high-traffic weekends, Miami Beach said it would institute $100 parking fees for non-residents. They're going to have curfews, DUI checkpoints, beach closures, bag checks, and a much heavier police presence.
Mm-hmm.
The city even made a pointed video asking spring breakers to come back only when they've grown up a little.
Really?
Yeah, and Miami says they've also seen a rise in violence over the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two fatal shootings last year during spring break.
Ooh, ooh. That's scary. I never liked spring break. It was just... even as a kid, it was just weird, wild and.
Mm-hmm. Well, where I went to school, it was not a thing.
My school. Well, I went to a small school, so that's part of it, I guess. We've got so much to talk about. I'm not sure where to go.
Okay. Well,
we're gonna have a woke alert a little bit later in the show. By the way.
What I can tell you is, chocolate chip ice cream is slowly falling out of the top ice creams in the U.S.
Really? Chocolate chip. My new favorite is the Java ice cream at H-E-B.
What Java?
Java chunk, I think it's called.
Yes, chocolate chunk.
Ooh,
chocolate chunk.
But it's Java. It says Java on it.
That's the coffee part.
Yeah.
And it has chocolate.
Oh, Java chocolate chunk. Okay.
Chocolate chunks.
Oh, okay. All right.
Simple vanilla plus chocolate has been supplanted by consumers' love of premium flavors like cookie dough and salted caramel.
Hmm. Well, that's just absolutely fascinating.
And while we're on the subject of cold things,
yes,
the term brain freeze was invented by 7-Eleven to explain the pain you feel when drinking a Slurpee too fast.
They invented that term, brain freeze?
Well, I Googled it. Didn't find any contradiction.
If you found it on the internet, it must be true. You know, I read a quote by Abraham Lincoln. He's a very wise man, and I read a quote from him on the internet, and he said the quote, "Not everything you read on the internet is accurate." Canadian Jigs McDonald, NHL Hall of Fame broadcaster, actually said this at a speech. He said, "I'm truly perplexed that so many of my friends are against another mosque being built in Toronto. I think it should be the goal of every Canadian to be tolerant of even the most radical Muslims, even though they want to kill us.
Wow.
Thus, the mosque should be allowed in an effort to promote tolerance." McDonald went on to say, "This is why I also propose that two nightclubs be open next door to the mosque. We could call one of the clubs, which would be gay, the Turban Cowboy, and the other would be a topless bar called You Mecca Me Hot. Next door should be an open-pit barbecue pork restaurant called Iraq of Ribs, I-R-A-Q of Ribs. Across the street, there could be a lingerie store called Victoria Keeps Nothing Secret, with sexy mannequins in the window modeling the goods. And the other side, a liquor store called More Hammered." All of this...
Mohammed, isn't it?
More Hammered.
Okay.
But Jigs McDonald, NHL Hall of Fame broadcaster, said that, and he said, "All of this would encourage radical Muslims to demonstrate the tolerance they demand of us." You know, their slogan is, "We are the religion of peace, and if you don't believe it, we'll kill you." So there you go.
Well, do you know that this week, in 1800, the Library of Congress was established?
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. 1800. Mm-hmm. When Alice and I worked on Capitol Hill for the United States Congress, we had the privilege as staffers.
Library privileges.
Access to the Library of Congress and access. We could check out books, which no civilian can do that. But we could check out books from the Library of Congress and, you know, of course, spent a lot of time in research, particularly with the legislation and that kind of thing. So the Library of Congress also operates a CRS, the Congressional Research Service, and that is extremely valuable to staff.
Well, it was before Google.
Well, as you know, but if CRS says something, you know it's true. You know, that's
the thing. They probably got it on Google.
They weren't biased. No, they didn't get it on Google. The World Economic Forum. I think everybody by now knows what that is. That's the bunch of globalists who want to, get rid of all national boundaries, and they want to run the world. That's the bottom line. They want to run the world. Well, this is the World Economic Forum is one of the groups of many. There's Bilderbergers, and there's I can't even remember the names of all of them, but they're all interconnected. And do you find it, Allison? Lower right? Okay.
It's about half the same.
Excuse me?
Mine says shaman.
Yeah, it does. just a little inside radio talk there. During the latest meeting in Davos, Switzerland, for the World Economic Forum, just happened not too long ago. You know, they fret about the state of the world. They're afraid of the environment in general. The climate, climate change is going to kill us all in the next 3 minutes. Shrinking glaciers. By the way, sea levels are going to rise. You've heard Al Gore say that for many years. There's no evidence at all. But he keeps talking about it. But then he and Obama, John Kerry, they've all got oceanside mansions in Martha's Vineyard and various other places. And why would you buy or build an oceanside mansion.
Multi-million dollars.
If you're, and how do these people get so rich? Now, I know how John Kerry got rich. He married Teresa Hines.
He married money.
Yeah, he married Teresa Hines, who was the widow of John Hines, who was the heir to the Hines ketchup, you know, fortune. But how did guys like Al Gore get so rich? How do guys like Obama, who was a community organizer in Chicago, mm-hmm. get rich? Remember, Truman said anybody who gets rich in politics is a crook.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, getting back to Davos and the World Economic Forum. You know, they have their annual meeting and they share their concerns about after their week of cocktails and closed meetings and dinners and fine restaurant dining. By the way, they don't eat bugs there. Black slapping, endless self-congratulations. And there was, during their meeting at Davos, they were treated to ballet dancers performing in the snow, accompanied by a cellist, all set aside against an icy backdrop designed to spark hope and melt their cares away. Their showpiece, it was called Performing Hope, to raise the spirits of guests worried about the impacts of climate change and encourage them to keep taking action in their own small ways. It's a chance to reach the world's leaders. So they gather in this plush Swiss ski resort and try to heal a troubled world. However, this is the over-the-top part. An Amazonian shaman performed a pagan ritual over a World Economic Forum panel after the members discussed climate and nature. After a discussion on how to enable a net-zero, nature-positive future, a woman introduced as Chief Putani from the Yawanawa tribe of the Amazon gave a brief address asking for help in, quote, healing the planet. She claimed to represent the voice of nature and the voice of the forest as she engaged in what appeared to be a pagan ritual blessing, rubbing her hands together and reciting a prayer before, you got it, you know, I wish we had the video. She went to each one of them, blew air on the head of each panelist. And they sat there and they didn't crack up. They took it seriously. This shows you how crazy these people mm-hmm. are, how far out of touch they are. So here's a little audio of, what's her name? Chief Putani from the Yawanawa tribe. Now she's blowing air on the forehead of each of the WF panelists.
Well, the applause isn't overwhelming.
No, the applause was not right. She's continuing to do that. Yeah, there she goes, blowing air on their heads, and they just sit there and they're serious. They take it seriously. This is how nuts these people are. These are the people who think they run the world, and they probably do in a large part. Oh man. Ah, what you got, Allison?
Well, do you know this week was National Hug a Plumber Day? During this past week.
Did you?
National Hug a Plumber Day.
Did you?
I did not. I didn't have the opportunity to see my plumber.
I'll tell you what.
Well, on a more serious note, Kerr County has now reported case number 9 of rabies.
Ooh.
And it's another skunk that tested positive. A resident reported a skunk that appeared to be ill in their backyard in Indian Oaks last Tuesday. On Friday, the specimen was confirmed as positive. The resident's dog did come in contact with the skunk, and Texas law says that the animal must be euthanized or follow rabies protocol.
Mm.
Protocol requires isolation and rabies vaccines based on the pet's vaccination status.
That's very scary.
And I've heard that about people. If you are exposed to rabies, it's very, very the treatment is very, very painful.
Yeah, so get your pets vaccinated, and don't, you know, just because you live in the county and they don't require it, get it vaccinated anyway. against rabies, because that's going to kill your pet very possibly, or they either euthanize your pet or they will put it through some horrible treatment that's very painful for the pet. Or if you get rabies, it's very painful for you.
Well, I suspect that the counties do require rabies shots.
Do they? I thought they didn't.
But, I suspect they do.
But getting back to the World Economic Forum for a moment, I came across this quote from H.L. Mencken. And he could be talking about the World Economic Forum. The urge to save humanity is almost always only a false face for the urge to rule it.
Ooh.
Good.
It's very good.
Yeah. Oh, people ask us about, what's your private life like, Bill and Allison? And, you know.
Do they? And do you tell them?
I'm about to, on the air. You know, I will say, Allison, I make a point of going out to dinner to a good restaurant every week, and have a fine meal and great conversation, great fellowship. I go on Friday, she goes on Wednesdays.
I thought you were going to talk about what a good cook I am.
You are a good cook. You are an excellent cook. She made me a wonderful roast lamb dinner the first on our first date. First date.
That's right. It wasn't our first date.
No, it wasn't our first date.
The first date that I invited you over to my house.
No, the first date was at Le Semur Des Moines,
right,
in Georgetown, Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. This is the official state song of Texas. Coming back, we're going to have a woke alert, which means the craziest thing we could find going on among the woke population, and you won't want to miss that. We'll be back in just a moment or two after these important messages. Stay tuned.
Emblem of freedom, it sets our hearts aglow with thoughts of San Jacinto and glorious Alamo. God bless you, Texas, and keep you brave and strong, that you may grow in power and word throughout the ages long. God bless you, Texas, and keep you brave and strong, that you may grow in power and word throughout the ages long.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison, Hill Country Patriot.
Bill and Allison Mencaro, back with you on the radio on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. We cover the entire Hill Country, everywhere from Kerrville, Fredericksburg, Johnson City, Bandera, Hunt, Comfort, Center Point, Mountain Home, Ingram. Am I leaving anybody out? Harper. Okay. Can't forget Harper.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Allison, we have to do a little behind-the-scenes radio. Allison's our engineer, and I have to give her a little signal when I want something to do, want something done. And I've got three of these that we're going to be doing, Allison.
Wow.
And see this one?
That's exciting.
See that one?
Uh-huh.
And see this one? Okay. We normally do this during commercial breaks, but we didn't get a chance to this time. So we got our woke alert coming up right now. It's not an air raid. It's the Bill and Allison woke alert. The craziest thing that we could find to among the woke of the world. And we were talking about the World Economic Forum before the break. Well, they're a never-ending source of woke alerts for us. Okay. America's largest meat producer, which is Tyson's, they've announced a new partnership with the World Economic Forum-linked company to open a major insect processing plant in the United States. They're the largest producer of all kinds of meats. They're buying a stake in the Netherlands-based insect protein company called Protex BV. Protex BV. Okay. Protex describes itself as leading the world in the technical aspects of insect production. Okay. And the company has also been hailed by the World Economic Forum and was awarded with the Globalist Organization's Technology Pioneer Award. Technology Pioneer Award. So, the two companies are going to collaborate to establish a manufacturing facility in the United States for insect protein inclusion. And it says it can be beneficial to both the planet and animals. So, the WEF, I know what you're looking for.
No, you don't.
Oh, I don't? Okay. The World Economic Forum and major corporations have been increasingly pushing for a reset of the global food supply chain. The WEF has been very vocal about how we all should give up beef and, you know, eat lab-created foods and particularly insects because of the carbon emissions involved in producing meat. Instead, the public must eat insects. I'd love to see the menu at Davos when they have their meetings. You suppose they have a bunch of bugs on the menu? You know they don't.
Well, you know what I was looking for? You thought I was looking for something else. I ran across...
I know what you ran across, and I took it out because I have it.
Oh.
Cricket powder.
Oh, what?
Yeah. I'd forgot to tell you. But it's... You know, unelected bureaucrats, corporate elites continue to push for the public to be banned from eating meat. Phoenix, Arizona is restricting food supply as part of their Democrat mayor's plans to ban meat and dairy consumption, along with private car ownership to fight climate change. Globalist leaders around the world have agreed to ban the public from obtaining meat, dairy, and private vehicles by 2030. 6 years from now, they agreed... The WEF has agreed to ban, they do everything they can of their member nations, to ban the public from obtaining meat, dairy, and private vehicles by 2030.
Wow.
It's not going to happen, but that's what they want.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so you have that item on the cricket powder?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I don't know what that is. It's there. It's called Achita, A-C-H-E-T-A. Now, Achita domesticus may be on the label, but it's cricket. Some are hiding it by calling Achita protein and promoting it as a great alternative to animal protein, you know, made with cricket protein powder. However, if you have a shellfish allergy, it's likely to cross-react with cricket Achita protein, causing a severe reaction. If you have an extreme allergy to shellfish and you eat cricket or also known as a cheetah, this could cause an adverse response up to including death without immediate medical attention. See, slowly we're being led to believe that eating sustainably raised meat is bad. You know, this big push to mass produce bugs for food, to stop eating meat. The world's largest cricket farm is in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And if the trend continues, expect that the cricket providers are going to find cheaper ways to feed the crickets and mass produce them, while slick marketing teams are going to make you feel guilty for enjoying grass-fed meat, free-range chicken. You know, the FDA now allows crickets to be used for and in food.
I was going to check our food labels and see if we had any.
A cheetah.
I know.
You know,
spell it.
A-C-H-E-T-A.
Yeah, and it's very possible it's on labels of foods that we buy.
It certainly is. Consumer Labs tested two popular cricket powders, Entomo Farms, E-N-T-O-M-O, and Exo, E-X-O. They found one heavily contaminated with arsenic, which is a carcinogen, five times the inorganic arsenic found in the most contaminated rice that they've tested. Crickets concentrate toxins from their food. So if arsenic's in their food, it's going to be in them. Cricket flour or cricket powder is made out of milled crickets, and whatever they were fed has concentrated in their bodies and gets, and of course, becomes something that you ingest.
We need to go home and look at our labels.
Yeah, I know. But the lie is, oh, it's higher in protein than animal protein.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact is, you'd need to eat a bag, maybe 10 pounds of cricket powder to equal the protein you get from a 3-ounce serving of meat, of beef.
Eat the bugs. Eat the bugs. Eat the bugs. Eat the bugs.
Yeah, eat the bugs. Eat the bugs. That's what you want to do, is eat the bugs. We've got this, we've got a, oh, here it is. This is a guy named Matthew Lau, who's a professor at some elite university somewhere in the United States. And this is, you'll notice when he gives his ideas of how to get people to stop eating meat, even the super woke audience doesn't take him seriously. But this is the level. You know, send your kid to a high class, fancy university, Harvard or wherever, and this is, you know, it doesn't have to be Harvard. It can be a state school too. We're finding out. It can be the community college. They're woke community colleges now. But this is the kind
which our tax dollars support.
Yes, thank you very much, Allison. Which your tax dollars support. Anyway, this is the kind of stuff that they're being taught.
18% of greenhouse gas emissions come from livestock farming. So if we eat less meat, we could significantly reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. Now, some people would be willing to eat less meat, but they lack the willpower. Human engineering could help. Just as some people are naturally intolerant to milk or crayfish, like myself, we could artificially induce mild intolerance to meat by stimulating our immune system against common bovine proteins. And in this way, we can create an aversion to eating eco-unfriendly food. And we can do this, for example, by having meat patches, kind of like nicotine patches. People can then wear these patches before they go out for dinner to curb their enthusiasm for eating meat.
Some have said, down through history,
what a nutcase. But that's scary, because you send your kid to school and they come back with all these crazy ideas taught by crazy professors that ought to be, you know, they ought to be in a mental institution, not teaching.
Although I suspect a lot of kids are resistant to that.
I hope so.
That indoctrination.
You know, it's become any more a degree is just, given the costs of these of higher education these days, a degree is a receipt. That's what it basically is. Okay, we're Bill and Allison Mancaro. Gonna take a short break. When we come back, more from your Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris. More wisdom from her. Stay tuned. Bill and Allison, we'll be right back.
It don't matter where I may roam, tell you people that it's home sweet home, America.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison Mancaro on Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you can find us, reruns of our shows, anytime at firstcoupleoftexasradio.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Firstcoupleoftexasradio.com. Of course, it's hillcountrypatriot.com as well. And also, a lot of people don't know there's an app that you can get for the Hill Country Patriot. Just go to the website and or go to the Google Play Store or the, what's the other one, iPhone Store. Everybody, well, if you have an iPhone, you know where it is. And you can download the Hill Country Patriot app and listen to the radio live wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing to know about as well.
Mm-hmm.
A little Texas history for you. This week in 1883, the Catholic Church sold the Alamo Chapel to the state of Texas for $20,000.
Hmm.
If you had $20,000 and lived in 1883, you could have bought the Alamo. The Army had abandoned the Alamo in 1876, only, what, a few years earlier, when Fort Sam Houston was established in San Antonio. About that time, the church sold the convent, because that's what the Alamo is. I think everybody knows that. That's mm-hmm. the chapel. So what we know as the Alamo today is actually the chapel. But actually, it was a complex of buildings originally. About 1876, before they sold it to the state of Texas, the church sold the chapel to a man named Honoré. I don't know how to pronounce that. H-O-N-O-R-E. Honoré. Okay. I don't know how he pronounced it. Right. Granet, G-R-E-N-E-T. He added a new two-story wood building to the Alamo complex. He used the convent and the new building for a wholesale grocery business. It was a grocery business. The Alamo was a grocery business.
Well, that's funny because nowadays people complain that there's, you know, merchandising going on, you know, sales right around the Alamo.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it used to be a grocery.
It's nothing new.
It used to be a grocery warehouse. Well, when San Antonio's tourism started to grow because the railroad came in 1877, the city started heavily advertising the Alamo, and they'd used photos and drawings that showed only the chapel, not the surrounding city, and that's why even today a lot of people are disappointed when they see the Alamo.
Exactly.
You know, they think it's going to look like it looked in the John Wayne movie.
Exactly.
But so in 1877... a tourist wrote, "The chapel, quote, is a reproach to all of San Antonio. Its wall is overthrown and removed. Its dormitories are piled with groceries. Its battle-scarred front has been revamped and repainted, and market carts roll to and fro on the spot where flames ascended over the funeral pyre of heroes." So the Catholic Church had enough of that, and they sold the chapel to the state of Texas, as I said, in 1883. The state hired a man to manage the building. He gave tours but didn't make any efforts to restore the chapel. And actually, in the past decades, soldiers and members of the local Masonic Lodge, which had used the building for meetings, had inscribed various graffiti on the walls and on the statues. And in May of 1887, a devout Catholic who was incensed that Masonic emblems had been inscribed on a statue of Saint Teresa was arrested after breaking into the Alamo convent and smashing statues with a sledgehammer. And it reminds me, years ago, the famous Pietà by Michelangelo, which is in the St. Peter's in Rome, was attacked by a man with a hammer. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes, I do.
And I do remember somebody, some wit saying, well, the Pietà? Well, he saw the sign and he thought it said pinata. Why is wrong with, what is my bell not working properly? I have to talk to Harley about fixing. Are there any bell fixers in town? Old bell repair shops? So anyway, in 2011, a law was passed and signed by Governor Perry to transfer custodianship of the Alamo from the Daughters of the Republic of Texas to the Texas General Land Office. And George P. Bush was the head of the General Land Office at the time. And a lot of people were, let's say, ticked off at him for doing what he wanted to do. He wanted to make it a, you know, big complex and take out the memorial, move it. A big to-do. But that's probably why he never made it any farther in politics. He ran for something, Secretary of State or Governor or something. George P.
George P.
If you can remember him.
I don't remember.
Hard to remember.
I don't remember what he ran for.
Yeah, but he lost. And all right. You don't hear about him anymore. And which is, we don't need any more Bushes, I'll tell you. What you got, Allison?
Well, last Saturday, superstar Swedish pole vaulter Mondo Duplantis broke his own world record by clearing 6.24 meters. That's 20.47 feet. Mm-hmm. His previous record... Okay, get that, 6.24 meters.
Okay.
His previous record, 6.23 meters, set last September. Then, 6.22 before that. And it's all done by design. He gets a check, which can reach up to $100,000 when he breaks the world record. So he raises the bar by 1 centimeter each time to maximize his earnings.
Smart.
Now, he's not the first one to do it.
Yeah.
This was started years ago by the great Ukrainian pole vaulter Sergei Bubka to collect as many checks from Nike as possible. Bubka broke his own record at least a dozen times between 1985 and 1994. During those 9 years, the bar went all the way from 6.0 meters to 6.14 meters. Isn't that funny?
It is funny. That is funny. Wow.
Oh, I'm seeing where we're going to go with this. We had a interesting... I did promise some wisdom from our vice president, Allison.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, what are you laughing about? Of course, we're going to have wisdom from our vice president. Here is Vice President Kamala Harris, your vice president, giving us some words of wisdom, things you probably didn't know. Kamala, take it away.
Today is today, and yesterday was today yesterday. Tomorrow will be today tomorrow. So live today, so the future today will be as the past today, as it is tomorrow.
You're stupid. Really, really stupid. You're stupid.
Kamala. What would we do without you? You provide so much comic relief. You know, she claims to have Indian blood. Did you know that? American Indian blood. And, but... Kamala, I'm a ho is not a tribe. Okay? Get that straight. Kamala Harris, your vice president. Could be your vice president for another 4 years. Yeah, Biden-Harris ticket. So, there you go.
So make sure to...
That's a no-brainer.
Make sure to... a double no-brainer. Make sure to get out and vote for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And encourage your friends and neighbors, too.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people don't really follow politics. They don't really care one way or the other. And if you just say... If you haven't already made up your mind, I'm going to vote for Trump or whoever. And people say, okay. Got so much more. We got piles of stuff to tell you about. Things that you won't hear on any other radio station except the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. We are Bill and Allison and Carol. News is coming up and some important announcements. And then we'll be back for another hour. Stay with us.
Now, the first couple of Texas Radio. Here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
Welcome back.
You know, that first couple of Texas Radio is not something we invented. We're not that, don't have that much hubris.
I thought you were going to say we weren't that clever.
We're not that clever either. that was come up by the station. I think Bob Harmon and Harley co-authored that. I'm not sure, we sure appreciated Bob and Harley. That's because people pay a lot of money to consultants in radio to come up with phrases like that. So exactly. We first couple of Texas Radio, which is also our own website, mm-hmm. firstcoupleoftexasradio.com, where you can listen to our programs and back programs and download them to your favorite digital device take them with you wherever you go.
Well, Bill, you mentioned a Celtic event,
mm-hmm.
unless it was the Boston Celtics,
no.
But I think it was a Celtic event.
Boston Celtics, but every other pronunciation is Celtic.
Well, anyway, the ancient Celts were the first to ferment and distill grains into whiskey. They called it the water of life.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Did not know that.
Now you know.
Now I know. Well, speaking of ancient stuff... Allison, did you know records indicate Julius Caesar never once said thank you in his entire life?
How rude.
Yeah, well, probably because he couldn't speak English.
Wow, that was good.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, business groups, including the Chamber of Commerce, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, have sued to block the FTC's new rule banning non-competes, which would make it harder... Non-competes make it harder for employees to change jobs.
That's true.
Now, this was a huge win for workers. The question is, why ban non-competes? The FTC says that non-competes limit worker mobility, suppress pay, and undermine competition by preventing workers from seeking other jobs. Non-competes used to be only for highly paid executives, to stop them from taking insider secrets to another company. But in recent years, we've seen lower paying jobs too. Now, 1 in 5 employees, including fast food workers and yoga instructors, fell under these agreements.
Huh.
about that?
Fast food employees fell under a non-compete agreement?
Yeah. Yeah,
so they couldn't, you know, if you quit or were fired from McDonald's, you couldn't go to work for Burger King?
Yeah, apparently. Apparently.
Wow.
Okay, so the question is why keep them? And excuse me. Business groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce argued that non-competes help companies by protecting their confidential internal info and encouraging them to invest in their workforce, knowing that their employees won't pack up and leave.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that. That's very interesting.
I was under one once.
Were you really? Non-compete? So you had to...
My boss was a total jerk. Total jerk. You probably can figure that out.
I know who you're talking about. I do. It's a little factoid that some people know, but some people don't. And I'm just looking. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. China emits more CO2 than the rest of the developed world combined. They manufacture electric vehicle batteries using children as slave labor, solar panels, wind turbines, using energy from coal-fired power stations. So the West can pretend to be green. Here's a little audio cut from Joe Rogan's program about this subject.
China produces more carbon than all the developed nations combined.
Which is very important to talk about when people are talking about going green, because the amount of impact that would happen, even if the United States went to zero carbon output, you're not going to put a dent in what's happening to the world, because most of it is coming from China and India,
right?
Yeah,
right.
That's most of it. So all this about don't eat meat because we're going to save the world, you're not saving jack. No. And I don't understand where that message is coming from or why there's not a nuanced perspective where people are taking into account all these other variables.
Now, Joe Rogan, very good point. Very good point. If you're concerned about what's going on in our schools, if you're a parent and you're wondering, you know, what are my kids being taught? Here's a website you need to go to. So grab something to write with, and in a moment I'll give you the website address. It's from a group called Alliance Defending Schools, and they have online training for parents, and it's free. It's called Parental Rights in the Face of Critical Theory. Of course, critical theory, critical race theory, is that all white people are evil, and America was founded on racism and all that nonsense. Here's the web address to get free training to protect your kids from this kind of stuff. And when your kids come home and they spout this woke crap, you can tell them exactly why that's wrong. Okay, the website is tinyurl.com. That's T-I-N-Y as in small, tinyurl.com/ Parent Rights 2023. tinyurl.com/ Parent Rights, PARENTRIGHTS 2023. Well,
incompetent.
What?
Incompetent.
What's incompetent?
That's how the
incontinent? What did you say?
Incompetent.
Yeah, I heard you say that.
That's how the city of Baltimore describes the crew of the Dali container ship in a new lawsuit against the owner of the vessel.
That hit the bridge?
Which crashed into and destroyed the Francis Scott Key Bridge last month. The city alleged that the crew decided to leave port despite knowing that the Dali wasn't fit to sail after a power supply alarm went off. Baltimore also accused the owner, Grace Ocean Private Limited, of supplying unseaworthy equipment, systems, and appurtenances. Baltimore wants payment for replacing the bridge and expenses tied to the cleanup and ongoing transportation disruptions.
Well, you remember Joe Biden jumped on that to get votes? As soon as I think the bridge was still collapsing when he announced, you know, we'll fix it. Well, you know, we're going to, all the power, all the money, it doesn't matter, we're going to fix. Well, first of all, you know, he's just trying to buy votes from the Northeast. And It's not up to the federal government to fix it.
No.
It's up to the shipping company
that
who ran into the bridge to pay to put that back. And if it takes a lawsuit to do it, then there should be a lawsuit.
Well,
but we shouldn't ask taxpayers in Texas to pay for some foreign company that ran into a bridge.
In Maryland. Well, and another thing Joe Biden did, he said, I used to go over that bridge every day in the train. Well, guess what? That bridge had no train tracks.
No train tracks.
It never did.
It never did. No train tracks. I'll tell you. Well, that reminds me of what Obama said about Biden not too long ago. I don't know exactly when this was, but here is Barack Obama on Joe Biden.
We all know some folks in our lives who we don't wish them ill will. They say crazy stuff. We're all like, well, you know, Uncle Joe, you know what happened to him. You know, it's okay. They're part of the family. But you don't give them serious responsibilities.
Whoa.
Like you don't make him president of the
United States. You don't make him president of the United States, do you? Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what. This was referenced in our news break at the top of the hour. And I don't know if we... Do we need to take a break, Allison? Because I've got quite a bit to say about this next subject.
No, we can go for a few more minutes.
Okay. This is actually written by Ron Paul, a former congressman, Ron Paul, father of Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul. He said, and I'm going to read some excerpts. I thought it was particularly good. He said, when future historians go searching for the final nail in the U.S. coffin, they may well settle on the date April 20, 2024, just the other day. On that day, Congress passed legislation to fund 2.5 wars, hand what's left of our privacy over to the CIA and NSA, and give the U.S. president the power to shut down whatever part of the internet he disagrees with. The nearly $100 billion bill, called the National Security Supplemental, guarantees that Ukrainians will continue to die in that country's unwinnable war with Russia, and that the neocons will continue to push us toward a war with China, and Russia, by the way. It was a total victory for the war party, according to Ron Paul. He said the huge spending bill is all about politics for Biden, yet so many Republicans simply went along with it. The U.S. and its allies have already sent over $300 billion to Ukraine. Of course, it's important to protect Ukraine's borders, but not the United States. And the country is still losing its war with Russia. Nobody believes another $60 billion will pull a victory from the jaws of defeat. But this additional money is meant to keep up appearances until November at the expense of Americans who are forced to pay for it and Ukrainians who are forced to die for it. House Speaker Mike Johnson could not have passed these monstrosities without the full support of House Democrats because the majority of Republicans voted against more money for Ukraine. So Johnson pushed through a massive gift to the warfare corporate welfare state. And not to be outdone, Ron Paul writes, the U.S. Senate on that same day passed the extension of Section 702 of the FISA Act, which not only allowed the government to continue spying on us without a warrant, but also contained new language massively expanding how they can spy on us. And Ron Paul concludes, many conservative voters are asking what is the point of Republican control of the House if the agenda is determined by Democrats? Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is even reported to have bragged to his colleagues about how easily Speaker Mike Johnson gave Democrats everything they wanted and asked for nothing in return. Ron Paul concludes, what is the silver lining in all this bad news? Most Republicans in the House voted against continuing the Ukraine war. That's a good start. Our ideas are growing, not only across the country, but even in the D.C. swamp. Take courage and don't give up. Work for peace. Ron Paul. I thought that was worth sharing.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, Ron Paul's a great man.
He sure is.
Ran for president. Unfortunately, didn't win.
Yeah.
But
a great, great man.
I always say that I was a journalist at the time, and I always say that it was a small newsletter that I published, and I can always say that Ron Paul is the only presidential candidate who called me back.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, I put in a call to Ron Paul, and he called me back. Well, after the break, we're going to talk about the nasty politics here in Kerrville.
So yeah, some things you need to know about some local candidates running in Kerrville, and all the lies that are being told about them. On the Bill and Allison Show, we're going to set the record straight. So stay tuned right after this brief message.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison Mancaro. Thanks for joining us. And plan to join us every Saturday morning, 8 to 10, or listen to us, our past shows, at firstcoupleoftexasradio.com.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, you know, we told you we were going to talk about how nasty politics are, at least in this race, in Kerrville. And it's just amazing that the mud that's being thrown.
Mostly from the left.
Yeah.
I don't see any mud coming from the conservative candidates.
No. And
although these people are call themselves conservatives, but they don't vote that way.
Yeah. Well, the thing is about
and when I say these people, I'm naming some names. Oh, you know.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. Talking about Joe Herring.
Yeah.
And go ahead. We'll name some more names.
Okay. What I wanted to say is Barbara Duell Ferguson, who's running for city council, is being attacked for several things, but the most disgusting thing is these lefties sent out a little thing supporting three candidates, and Bill got it in his email box this week, and it was three different candidates, and they were running against Barbara Duell Ferguson. And what they said about her, they said what she.
Oh, well, they listed, no, to back up for a minute.
Okay.
The candidate they support, they listed, you know, her qualifications for being on city council. Mm-hmm. Now go ahead and say what they listed for Barbara Duell Ferguson's qualifications.
What they listed for hers is housewife. Her real background.
Yeah.
She was a partner in a residential home site development for 15 years. She has experience in land planning. She has the oversight of the Walden Corporation water and wastewater plant serving 300 plus homes. Financial management. She is a licensed wastewater operator. She's involved in HOA management, government compliance, and she was manager of training at the Junior Achievement National Headquarters. But and they called her a housewife.
Yeah, that's all they said. Her qualification, she's a housewife.
Yeah.
So they're lying by omission, and that's the same thing as lying by commission.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So they are liars, and they should have their pants on fire.
No. Yeah, and Joe Herring, his attack against his opponent.
Roman Garcia. Who we are voting for.
Yes.
Oh, no, we aren't. We don't live in the city. We support.
We're supporting.
That way, yeah.
But he has several attacks against Roman. One, that he's young. Well, yeah. So what?
And he's never been mayor before.
Yeah.
Well, everybody running for any office, if they have, you know, most people running for office have never been, unless they're running for re-election, have never been in that office before. Yeah. What does that mean?
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. he's never been mayor before.
Well, Joe Herring has been mayor, and this current city council has digging the town of Kerrville into the ground with their, for one of many examples, well, the deficit has grown tremendously under the current and past administrations. The that Lennar development on Veterans Highway across from the high school, you know, that's an embarrassment to the city of Kerrville. It's supposed to be low, you know, moderate income, whatever they call it, housing. It's not.
They're talking about start at 300,000.
280, I think, whatever they do. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, and plus, it's this very dense community directly across from the
it's going to add
high school. Is it the high school?
Directly across from the high school, next to the new middle school. You're going to have
traffic congestion like you won't believe. Mm-hmm. You've got water issues that the city council pretty much ignored. Mm-hmm. They gave Lennar a tremendous tax break, which is going to be made up by taxpayers in Kerrville. And Kerr County didn't give them a tax break, by the way, but the majority of the tax break comes from the city anyway. And it's an eyesore. The place mm-hmm. looks like army barracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you said, you know, you can barely walk between the buildings. They're poorly constructed, from what several experts mm-hmm. I've talked to have said.
And well, they're so close together. If you're really short, you can stretch out. You can stand between two of them and stretch out your arms and, you know, touch two houses. But mm-hmm. but a normal height person probably couldn't.
I don't know. But you know, I've done that kind of research. But the point is that these people who are in power in Kerrville approved that eyesore, right. That horrible. Not only an eyesore, as I say, the traffic on Veterans Highway will be horrible. The water usage is unknown. What it's going to do to our water. Barbara Duell Ferguson, running for city council, is an expert on water mm-hmm. and water usage. Mm-hmm. Just look at her background. Mm-hmm. Go to Barbara for Kerrville, F-O-R, not the numeral, barbaraforkerrville.com, and see. And it would be a shame if she's not elected to city council.
Well, what jumps out at me is you're talking about the city has a budget deficit. I've never heard of city the size of Kerrville having a budget deficit.
They got a bad one. I don't remember the numbers, but they've got a bad one. And well, we can go on and on. But Barbara for Kerrville and Roman Garcia running for mayor of Kerrville, endorsed by the Bill and Allison Show. Barbara lost last time when she ran for city council. Barbara Duell Ferguson. She lost by 3 votes. Mm-hmm. So you don't think your vote is important? Get out and vote.
You haven't already. Every vote counts.
You haven't already. Election day. Get out and vote Monday. There you go. Barbara Duell Ferguson mm-hmm. and Roman Garcia for mayor. Mm-hmm. And somebody else running, and I can't remember his name. Brent. This is why being prepared is important. But anyway, Brent's running, so vote for him as well. You know, we've seen multiple studies, speaking of this subject, of the liberals running Kerrville and the conservatives trying to fix that. We've seen multiple studies and research over the years which all found that liberals, especially female liberals, suffer from higher levels of mental illness than conservatives. Well, rarely has the parenting styles of liberals and conservatives been studied in relation with the mental health of their children. There's a new study by the Institute for Family Studies and Gallup, the Gallup poll people, have found that conservative parents are more likely to raise mentally healthy teens compared to liberal parents. It all comes down to rules, discipline, and parenting styles. In the past decade, mental health issues and suicide has increased to the point where the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry and the Children's Hospital Association have declared a national emergency in children's mental health. Okay. And aside from the study, of course, there's been an increase in gender issues, transgender stuff, non-binary, and all these other manufactured genders. But that's directly correlating with the increase of mental health issues and suicide. So even before the increase of transgenderism, where, you know, males think they're women and all that, the suicide rate of those who are gender confused, they call it gender dysphoria, was already significantly higher than those not confused about their gender, or their sex. A new study from the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law found that 81% of transgender adults in the United States have thought about suicide. 42% of transgender adults have attempted suicide. And 56% have engaged in non-suicidal self-injury. So the parenting styles of liberals, who often encourage gender confusion, with some claim that their children knew they were, quote, transgender by the age of 3 years old. Mm-hmm. There's a hospital, it just came to me now, that I read about. When you go in and have a baby, you have to tell the hospital what sex it is. Because they don't know. They can't tell. Mm-hmm. You know, you decide what sex your child, your baby, your newborn baby is. I mean, this is the... we live in clown world. We really do. So conservative parents are far less likely to encourage their children to attempt to change their gender. Liberal parents will say, well, they're just more accepting than conservative parents. You know, you can't change gender anyway. Men are XY chromosomes. Women are XX chromosomes, and no amount of pills or surgeries can change that. But it's only known when you encourage a child about questioning their gender, you're raising the chances of them committing suicide or self-mutilation. That's a fact. Now, in this new study by the Institute for Family Studies and Gallup, they don't deal with the gender issues, but the parenting styles and the mental health issues that are more prevalent in children raised by liberals than those raised by conservatives. They surveyed almost 7,000 parents, and according to they asked about mental health, visits to doctors, parenting practices, et cetera, et cetera. And the findings are, including excessive social media use, by the way. The findings are clear. The most important factor in the mental health of adolescent children is the quality of the relationship with the parents, or in some cases, non-parental caregivers. And that's strongly related to parenting practices. The best results come from warm, responsive, rule-bound, disciplined parenting. And the data also reveal the characteristics of parents who engage in these best practices enjoy the highest quality relationships with their children. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, but unfortunately it is a surprise to a lot of people. So when it comes to the quality of parenting practices, there's no variation by socioeconomic status. Now that might shock you. And, you know, maybe you were taught to believe that socioeconomic status dictates everything good in life. Well, income doesn't buy better parenting. In often cases, it's worse. And more highly educated parents do not score better either. And it doesn't vary by race and ethnicity either. So Jonathan Rothwell, who was one of the researchers that launched the study, said, quote, liberal parents score the lowest, even worse than very liberal parents, largely because they are the least likely to successfully discipline their children. Liberal parents don't discipline their children as they should. By contrast, he's quoting again one of the researchers, by contrast, conservative parents enjoy higher quality relationships with their children, characterized by fewer arguments, more warmth, and a stronger bond, according to both parent and child's studies. I mean, Allison, we've seen children in restaurants or stores where they run around and act like brats.
Yes.
But other children around the same age show manners and courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
9 out of 10 times, and this is just not making something up, this is from the study, the brat's parents are liberal, while the well-mannered children have conservative or very conservative parents.
Mm-hmm.
The researcher also said, aside from political ideology, parents who think highly of marriage, by that they disagree that's an outdated institution, and they know that it improves the quality of relationships by strengthening your commitment. So parents who think highly of marriage exhibit better parenting practices and have a higher quality relationship with their children. So parents who want their children to get married someday also tend to be more effective parents. Well, conservatives hold more of a pro-marriage view than liberals do, we know that. Studies have also found, by the way, that Republicans are happier in their marriages than Democrats are. So conservatives are also happier than Democrats, regardless of marriage, by the way. So finally, taken as a whole, these results suggest, and it's consistent with prior research, conservatives are happier because they believe hard work leads to good results and because they're more religious. Conservatives collectively are far more well-adjusted than liberals, so they end up raising more well-adjusted children. Liberal Democrats are constantly looking for something to be offended about. They're more likely to kill babies, the unborn. They project their own misery upon other people, constantly nagging, giving proof to the old cliche that misery loves company. So the bottom line is very simple. Liberal Democrats are literally making their children crazy. They're unhappier, they're less religious, they're more anti-marriage than conservatives, and less likely to discipline their children when they misbehave. And that's a fact.
Coming up after this break, we're going to be celebrating a birthday.
Oh, you won't want to miss this. I'm sure one of your favorite singers and one of the greatest singers of all time. And, of course, a Texan. We'll tell you who right after these brief announcements.
Once upon a time, there was light in my life. Now there's only love in the dark. Nothing I can say, a total eclipse of the heart. A total eclipse of the heart.
Well, guess who?
Guess who? No, that's not the guess who.
That's what it says.
Is that the guess who? That song?
That's what the board says.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Well, I could be right. Could be. I'm no expert on every kind of music, by the way. The next time you're washing your hands, I can
play. You grew up with that.
I grew up with what? Like what? You're interrupting my story.
That kind of music.
You're doing that talking thing again. You know, the other day, Allison said, I'd like to go somewhere I've never been before. So I took her to the kitchen. That's an old red skeleton.
That's not true at all.
You're a good cook. But That's an old red skeleton line. Another one was, my wife asked me, what's on TV? And he said, I think I gave the wrong answer. I said, dust. She didn't appreciate that.
Now that would be true.
All right. Oh, what do we got? Oh, I know what we got. It's a birthday celebration. We don't have happy birthday music. We should. You know, we do birthdays. We should.
Happy
birthday
right.
to you. I read that.
That's your job.
It is my job. I read that. I don't know if this is true anymore.
Get us some happy birthday music.
Happy birthday used to be copyrighted, and supposedly every time anybody sang it, they mm-hmm. had to send money to the author. I don't know if that's true. Happy birthday to Roy Orbison. He was born April 23rd, 1936, in Vernon, Texas, which is also where, oh golly, Jack Teagarden. I'm going to pull that out of my memory. Jack Teagarden, the great, great trombone player, was born. Vernon. Something must be in the water in Vernon. He grew up in Wink, Texas, a tiny little town. We actually know two people who knew Roy Orbison. One man mm-hmm. Grew up with him and classmate in Wink, and his story was, and I have no reason to doubt it, he said, he described Roy to us several times, and he said, he told us, he lives in Kerrville, and he told us that Roy Orbison offered to teach him to play the guitar, but his parents wouldn't buy him one. They were too poor. Ooh. Anyway. Roy Orbison's music was described by critics as operatic, earning him the nickname the Caruso of Rock. Others said his voice was otherworldly. Roy Orbison's voice ranged from baritone to tenor, and music scholars have suggested that he had a 3 or 4 octave range. One of his backup musicians said Roy Orbison was like an opera singer. His voice melted out of his mouth into the stratosphere and back. He never seemed like he was trying to sing. He just did it. Dwight Yoakam said Roy Orbison's voice sounded like, quote, the cry of an angel falling backward through an open window. Elvis Presley said Roy Orbison's voice was the greatest and most distinctive he had ever heard. And Roy Orbison was quiet. He's self-effacing, remarkably polite and obliging. I read a story one time where he was in a studio recording, and someone asked him, can I get you anything? And they were used to famous musicians with all these demands. You know, I want a big pot of M&Ms, but no, pick out the red ones. I don't want red ones in there. Well, Roy Orbison asked, he said, could I possibly have a Coke, please? That's the kind of guy he was. He had severe stage fright. He was afraid that people wouldn't like his performances. He went to North Texas State College in Denton. It's now the University of North Texas. He heard that a schoolmate who went to that same school, Pat Boone, had signed a record deal. And it further strengthened his resolve to become a professional musician. He dropped out of North Texas State College. He switched to Odessa Junior College, where we had another friend, Martin Rose, from Ridoso, who went to Odessa Junior College and actually managed Roy Orbison's band. He was. By the way, did you know Roy Orbison was not blind? A lot of people think he was, but he left his... He didn't have good eyesight. And he left his thick eyeglasses on an airplane in 1963 while he was on tour with the Beatles. And so he had to wear his prescription sunglasses on stage, and he found out he liked that. So that made a lot of people think he was blind, but he wasn't. Normal pop songs follow the verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus structure. His song, In Dreams, is a song in seven movements. No sections are repeated. Running Scared, the entire song repeats to build suspense to a final climax. And Crying, which we will hear in a moment, is more complex, changing parts toward the end. So what many people don't know, not only was Roy Orbison a one-of-a-kind singer, but as a composer, he blazed a trail never before tried that is unheard of virtually in musical composition. Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees said that when he heard the song Crying for the first time, he said, quote, "That was it. To me, that was the voice of God." That was Barry Gibb saying that. So Roy Orbison, there's never been someone, not only as a singer, but as a composer, there's never been anybody like him. One of the greatest of all time was Roy Orbison. And as we said, when you listen to Crying, which we'll play in a moment, is one of the most complex songs, at least pop songs, ever written. It changes parts toward the end. See, most, you know, you know what most songs are like. Da-da-da-da-dum, 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 dum-dum-dum-dum. And then it repeats. Crying is nothing like that. So, you ready to hear Crying? This is Roy Orbison with his great, great song, Crying.
I was all right for a while. I could smile for a while. But I saw you last night. You held my hand so tight as you stopped to say hello. Oh, you wished me well. You couldn't tell that I've been crying over you, crying over you. Then you said so long, left me standing all alone, alone and crying, 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 crying. Understand, but the touch of your hand can start me crying. I thought that I was over you, but it's true, so true. I love you even more than I did before, but
Orbison. Happy birthday, Roy Orbison, one of the most beautiful songs ever written and sung by one of the greatest talents in the history of certainly of pop music, Roy Orbison, and a Texan.
That's right.
Ain't that right? Well, don't forget a couple of things. We've gave our Bill and Allison Grapevine earlier in the show. Remember, it's a Kerrville Elks Lodge Sweetheart Roundup today, a day of fun, food, competition, and entertainment. So be sure you get to that. It's at the Elks Lodge, 1907 Junction Highway in Kerrville. The National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day is today from 10 to 2 at the Kerrville Police Department or Law Enforcement Center. Drop off your unused or unwanted prescription drugs for proper disposal. Let's see. Lake Hills Volunteer Fire Department is holding a barbecue and live auction today from 11 to 4 at Park Road 37 in Lake Hills. We are Bill and Allison. We're on every Saturday. Join us from 8 to 10 in the morning or firstcoupleoftexasradio.com. Thank you, Allison, for being our engineer. You did a great job today.
Thank you, Bill.
And remember to trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not unto your own understanding.